This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Back to open the voice gate for July 13th, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joined alongside, as always, my co-host, friend Case Lowe. And Case, we are now, as of the time recording, 18 days from the Kobe World Cannon Hall doubleheader, biggest weekend in the Dragon System's history, basically. How are you feeling about Dragon Gate, just as a heat check right now?
Coming out of this Cork and Hall show in particular, and this Kyoto show, which we'll cover ever so briefly on this show, is there are probably Dragon Gate hardcore fans that didn't realize there was a show in Kyoto this past weekend. And after watching it, I don't have a ton to say about said show in Kyoto, but I do have a lot to say about this Cork and Hall show. And unfortunately, coming out of that show, I am really down on the direction that things went. I will, especially of the main event scene, be more critical of Dragon Gate on this episode than I have in maybe a year and a half. It was a weekend where I spent time, you know, I watched the Cork and Hall show. It was on a Friday, so I was going to wait till Monday to type up my review. And there was just something about this show that just was very, very off-putting to me. And I still haven't really gotten over it. I really don't like the fallout from this Cork and Hall show. What about you, Mike?
I think this might be the most divergent we have ever been in this era, Open the Voice Gate, because this might have been my favorite Cork and Hall show that they've had probably since COVID, definitely since COVID, and maybe a little bit before that. But I do have some questions about the main event scene and how they've set up now, 731 and 8-1, of course, Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival, the 21st version of it, and then the Speedstar Final. Very perplexing kind of setup there that I've kind of backdoored my way into being right about Kobe World, but not in the way that I really wanted to be right after it was all said and done. I guess we should probably just take the big topic up top, Case. And after a no ropes lumberjack match, Yamato made a challenge that was accepted, and he will be facing whomever is the winner of the Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival match for the Dreamgate title between Shun Skywalker and the 2021 King of Gate. I said probably, I think back in March, that I would suspect that with like that, or really when they did the two, when they announced the two nights, it's like, oh yeah, Yamato is going to headline one of those nights. Well, he's not headlining, but he is getting a Dreamgate shot here and a really kind of interesting quizzical decision. Speedstar Final was functionally sold out basically for the last few weeks. It's now officially sold out, but now they're having the company ace get his first title shot in a few years up there, and it's one of those things that like I kind of like the idea of Yamato coming back and being like, all right, I got my groove back, I'm done with all this Hulk and Kai just bullshit, and now it's time for me to be the almighty again. He dropped the aren't I so cool quote at the end of it, and he's getting a title shot in a way that, I mean, against Shun Skywalker and against KZ in a time that feels like it's KZ's year in a way, and Shun Skywalker running into Yamato if he wins. I mean, that's one of those things that I know we were talking about how likely we thought KZ was winning the title for a couple of weeks now. Now we have a huge variable to talk about, KS.
I guess to be clear, I enjoyed this Cork and Hall show quite a bit, but the fallout, and especially this Dreamgate scene. Now, there's some other post-match stuff that I wasn't crazy about, but I hate what they have done with the Open the Dreamgate Championship this week. And I think every situation is a lose-lose situation. And I'm irate that Yamato has been put into this spot. I just don't understand it. I don't think this weekend needed it. It's puzzling from a booking perspective. It's puzzling from a business perspective. I'm lost on this, Mike. I don't understand why on August 1st Yamato needs to be in an Open the Dreamgate Championship match. I do not understand it.
And this isn't something where I think either of us are coming at this at the idea of, oh, Yamato is being shoved down our throats. No, he's been kept away from the title scene pretty much since like the Benkei defense that Benkei had. It's just that you don't need it to happen here. Like Yamato is like the ace up the sleeve, like literally like, oh, we needed to pop a big house. Yamato gets his first title shot in a few years. Like that was something that they could have thrown down here, and it was something that when they announced the two shows, I thought he would headline the first show because it's like, all right, Masato Yoshino's retiring. That show is going to sell out. That show basically sold out without Yamato being the title match to begin with. You could have used it on Kobe World, but then they very clearly have him making this huge either KZ push, like KZ getting his finally, for everyone who's been such a strong KZ fan over the years, finally getting put in the biggest show of the year, or Shun Skywalker firmly planting the flag and making a claim to be the ace of the next era. And now you have Yamato kind of coming in here to do it. And it's just one of those things that, at least from like my perspective, like I'm not against Yamato getting a title shot. It's just here that does not make any sense to me.
For historical purposes, the last two Yamato Dreamgate matches, like Mike mentioned, he had the August 24th, 2019 challenge against Benkei. So 2 years ago, he challenged Benkei for the Dreamgate belt and lost. The time before that was September 18th, 2017, when he lost the Dreamgate belt to Masaki Mochizuki. So in 4 years, he'll have three Dreamgate title matches, which for Yamato is very fair. I have no issue with the idea of him getting a title match. Quite honestly, I would have liked to have seen the every other year Dangerous Gate Yamato challenge continue. I just assumed up until this past week that Dangerous Gate 2021 would be headlined by either Yamato versus Shun or by Yamato versus KZ. But instead, we put ourselves into a situation where you have four possible outcomes leaving World. And I want to go through them with you, Mike. And I guess I just want to know to you,
yeah,
which sounds more appealing. We have scenario one, which is on night one, Shun Skywalker retains the belt, and then the next night, Shun versus Yamato, where Yamato wins the belt. Now, Mike, would you say this is the most likely scenario? Shun wins night one, Yamato wins night two.
I'm going to be doing a huge article for the web Voices of Wrestling at the end of the month, so where like I talk about the pass forward, but I haven't like put like expectancy or odds on it. I think that it is not the most unlikely scenario. I think it probably is third on my list on this. I have one that I think is the most likely scenario.
I'll continue to run through them. I guess just to break this one down a little bit, the idea of Shun winning on night one and then Yamato winning on night two, to me, it's the most realistic because Shun's going to retain and then he's going to meet his natural challenger in Yamato, and Yamato's going to win. The issue with this, and this will be a reoccurring theme as we go along, is that Yamato, if he wins this match, will be the first ever five-time Open the Dreamgate champion. Right now, the only four-time champions are Masato Yoshino, Shingo Takagi, and Yamato. And I got news for you. Those two guys, for a multitude of reasons, are not going to become five-time Open the Dreamgate champions. Now, Yamato is, at some point in his career, it's likely going to be this weekend. And if he does this against Shun, then what? We're going to have confetti come down for Yamato, and then we're going to have to clean it up just so we can wheel out Masato Yoshino one last time. It's going to get lost right in the shuffle. I talked about last week how, oddly enough, Yoshino versus Yamato at Kobe World 2010 really feels like the Chris Jericho Triple H match to The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, which was the BB Hulk and Shingo Takagi match at World 2010. This is almost the inverse of that scenario, where the semi-main event on this show is going to mean nothing, because by the end of the main event, we're going to be crying, Mike. I mean, we're going to have tears streaming down our faces at Masato Yoshino retiring. So who cares if Yamato wins the Open the Dreamgate belt? And on top of that, and this is one of my big issues with this, if this was any other promotion, if this was All Japan, if this was Noah, if this was New Japan, if this was AEW, if this was ROH, I would not care. But with the youth movement, the rapid youth acceleration that we've seen in Dragon Gate, I have a bit of an issue with 5 years after Yamato exited Kobe World beating Shingo for the Dreamgate title. 5 years later, we're going to get that exact same visual. And that just seems counterproductive to the current landscape of Dragon Gate. Do you have any pushback on that?
It's something that it just completely, like, Yamato's going to get his run. Yamato should get a run, but, like, honestly, like, while he's in good health and before he gets much older, it just, like, yeah, it kills him through the youth movement, and it's just going to completely go by the wayside. It'll become, like, a trivia question. Like, the next time that Joe Gagne has a five-star match game and has this on, it'd be like, what is the semi-main event of Speedstar Final? And that's what it's going to be. Like, entirely, you're dead on about that.
Scenario two, night one, Shun Skywalker retains the belt over KZ. And then night two, Shun Skywalker defeats Yamato, which I think would be a very interesting situation where Shun establishes himself as this, you know, really top dog, elite tier Dreamgate champion. And you have the added caveat we've talked about since Shun Skywalker returned from Mexico, how his biggest weakness is talking on the microphone. And you now get a scenario where he can pin two of the top guys in the company and then not cut a show closing promo, which seems a reason not to do it in itself, that this guy is not the guy to beat KZ and Yamato on the same weekend because he can't close the show with a promo.
Well, here's my pushback on that. There was issues in the past and kind of the story of the Dragon system of getting the young champion to the place where they feel absolutely comfortable with them going forward. Shingo Takagi had to happen in 2008. Binkei, his run was something on the outside. We're like, okay, this is going to be like an era change. It wasn't. However, you want to solidify Shun Skywalker as the guy in a post Masato Yoshino Dragon Gate. That's what you do. Like, straight up, you have him beat the King of Gate, which, by the way, King of Gate has not lost at Kobe World in a long time. And then you have him the next night take out the ace. And then there's not, like, unless, like, suddenly Shingo Takagi comes back with the IWGP World Heavyweight title and lays down, like, there's not much more you could do to further put a stamp on someone saying that he's his guy. So the promo thing, you're absolutely right on, but I can see how this would be a very defining weekend in Shun Skywalker's career if he pulls off the two wins. And it's something that, honestly, given, like, the bad luck he's had in the title reign, one can say that that's actually a very good, that would be a good payback for him in a way.
My concern there is Shun won this belt in November, so we're quickly approaching 9 or 10 months with him as the Dreamgate champion. And you look at the roster and you have to wonder, okay, if he leaves Kobe World with this belt, which you're saying there's a chance he does, who is next in line? And I think realistically he has about two defenses left. Maybe three. I'll give him Susumu, because I don't think we've seen Shun versus Susumu yet. But no, because didn't he beat Susumu in a singles match at a show last year, didn't they?
Yeah, he beat him in the lead up.
Okay, so Susumu's out of the picture. So realistically, I think you have Shun versus Doi, which Doi can't win. They can't have Doi in Ben K's reign out of nowhere, then have him in Shun's reign out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And you have SB Kento. And I've said for a while now, if there is a Shun Skywalker versus SB Kento Dreamgate match, I think SB Kento is winning the Open the Dreamgate championship. Now, I don't necessarily think that match is going to happen, but if you look at the roster, I don't see any other matches for him. So you're looking at a situation where he's going to leave World. He's going to dominate Yamato. He's going to dominate KZ. And then he's losing the belt, what, a month or two later?
There's one more match, I think.
Was it at Minora?
Minora, yeah. I think that there's some direction with Minora at this point that, like, kind of seems like I know that you're of the belief that Dangerous Gate is, you could pencil Yamato probably in there. I think that's a good place to test out Minora, to be honest.
We'll get to him. I have something to say on Coach Minora. We'll get to him, Mike. Scenario three, KZ defeats Shun Skywalker, becomes Open the Dream Gate champion on the first night, and then beats Yamato on the second night. Now, I think under normal circumstances, this would be an incredible way to establish KZ as a frontline top guy player. Obviously, you still have some Western fans that have reservations about him possibly being a Dreamgate champion. I don't know what the feeling is like in Japan. I know for me, I think he can lead the company. I think he can be the top guy. But the issue is, and this is a little similar to Yamato beating Shun, if that were to happen, you now have history taking place that is ultimately going to be forgotten, not because the match won't be great, not because it won't register in the minds of some fans, but it simply won't live up to the event, the spectacle that is going to be Masato Yoshino's retirement. And that is the history that KZ is 0-4 all time against Yamato in singles matches. You obviously have the Tribe Vanguard history. You have everything they've been through with KZ trying to get to the top of the card. KZ beating Yamato, that is his number one opponent. That is his public enemy number one. When he does it, it is going to be a big deal, and it cannot happen. It cannot happen at Speedstar Final, because no one is going to remember it if it does.
Yeah, it'll just become the one, you know, the 1-4. It's something where I think that that's probably my most likely guess at this point, because I think that that's my odds on favorite, at least as of July 13th. I think that it's something that will give him the big moment. He won't be a one key champion, and then whenever they move on, they say, "Oh yeah, no, he's a former Open the Dream Gate champion. He could lose the belt like to whomever." And then it is something where like you don't have that that mark of being a zero defense champion, which is a big thing. If like that's your only title reign in Dragon Gate, and you don't make it, and you don't get a key on that belt, that demeans you a lot. So I think that's a nice way to do it. But as you're saying, and as you're absolutely right, like the Speedstar Final is about Masato Yoshino. Like the fact that title match is happening is kind of demeaning to him in a way.
The scenario that would make me pull my hair out if it happened, the final scenario I've got here, where KZ would beat Shun Skywalker and then lose to Yamato. And I just have too much faith in Dragon Gate for them to do this, but I'm also so taken aback by Yamato being thrusted into this scene that I can't rule it out. But to me, this is absolutely your worst case scenario. KZ winning on night one, Yamato winning on night two.
Right. This is the zero key, right? Like he becomes the ultimate belt pillow. Like if anyone asks, like, oh yeah, who had like a useless title reign, just get another title reign? Oh yeah, it's building up KZ, having him finally look like he's going to win the big one. He wins the big one, and then he loses to the guy that is his, like, I would almost say career-long rival. It's either that or Masaki Mochizuki, it feels like. But it is going to be something that, if it happens, I mean, KZ's toast in a lot of people's minds, in my mind, at least.
And so you have those four scenarios, and I don't even think those highlight the biggest issue of all that I have with this, which is, where the fuck is Kota Minora? Why is Yamato jumping the line to get this title match? He lost to Kota Minora in the King of Gate semifinals, and as of this recording, Minora has no match at World. That is the antithesis of what I love about Dragon Gate booking. This is irresponsible. This is idiotic in some sense. I don't understand how Yamato is just jumping the line, bypassing the fact that Minora beat him clean, and demanding that he gets a Dreamgate shot on the second night. All of these scenarios, all of the issues I have with them would be negated if they did Minora versus Yamato on night one and Skywalker versus KZ on night one, and then the winners of those matches in night two, and you could do a consolation prize match if you want to. I don't care. You could just copy the New Japan format. What am I missing, Mike? I know Yamato beat Skywalker, but who gives a shit? Minoru beat Yamato. I am blown away by this booking decision.
Well, I can give you what I assume is the rationale. He's the ace. He's the ace. It's been that long, and it's something that they feel like it's time. I mean, I'm hoping in hindsight that we look back at this year in, we're like, yeah, the booking there was puzzling, but it was steps along the way to get to a point that is satisfying. But they've got a hole to dig themselves out of, because yes, Yamato is the ace, but I mean, he lost the semifinals of King Gate to someone who has been on an absolute tear. Like, he's the one getting the wins in the final countdown matches he's in with Masato Yoshino. He is the one that is just like, when we talk about this Cork and Hall show, like, I know Jay on commentary like made a comment like, oh, it's almost like it's passing a torch in a way. It very clearly feels like that there is something that is a big plan with Kota Minora, but it does not make sense why there's this big plan about Kota Minora and he's not figured into the Dreamgate scene immediately, because he has, I mean, if you look at how like the Bravegate title match was set up on Kyoto, that for 8-1, now it's Kakatora versus the winner of Okuda and Ginki Horiguchi. His claim was that he beat the number one contender. Like, in this case, shouldn't like the next show Kota Minora say, hey, I beat you before this, so since he's technically the number two contender and I beat him, shouldn't I get this title match now? Like, it just seems like that there's something going on here. I'm hoping that in hindsight it will all play out, but given the cards that they're dealt right now, it's very perplexing, and it's something that just feels unnecessary.
If the end goal is to get Yamato to win the Dreamgate belt and then Minoru to come out and challenge him, and let's say they have that match at Dangerous Gate, if this was, and I will use New Japan specifically as the example, not as a dig at New Japan, but because history dictates, and especially the Gato era, that this is how they book their main events, I would not have an issue with that. If Yamato jumped the line only so Minoru could circle back and they get their singles match, whatever, that's fine. But this is, I don't know, maybe I'm off base, you can correct me if I'm not, this feels so off-brand of Dragon Gate. This feels almost like, in the same way that especially during the Shima era, and especially during Shima's Dreamgate runs, those big Dreamgate matches would have a little bit of distance from the normal Dragon Gate house style. It was almost like they were trying to appease either the Japanese press or the naysayers about this promotion. They were trying to fit into a bubble that they didn't normally fit into. And this booking, to me, again, if it was All Japan, great. If it was Noah, who cares? If it was New Japan, this would be the way things normally go. But I just find Yamato jumping the line to be so shocking in this promotion. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And the way he kind of did it in that post-match promo, like, it was shades out of, you know, late Mad Blanky into, like, recently faced, I'm sorry, the end of his Berserk run into, like, his recent, like, face turn and forming Tribe Vanguard, where the promo came off, and I noticed that a lot of people were thinking it's somewhat heelish in a way. And that just has a whole lot of other questions there that it's just, I don't know if it's playing the ace card here, but it certainly felt like they played the ace card here. And that's not how this promotion operates. And it's very off-putting. And also, sorry
to cut you off there, but the other point about playing the ace card that I think is important to bring up is that they're putting him on a show that, like you mentioned, was going to sell out and was almost sold out before this match was ever announced. It's the same reason, you know, to me, New Japan held off on Okada Naito matches for so long. They didn't need to do them. They would have booked them for shows that were going to sell out in advance anyways. Why are you burning this match that you don't, either Shun versus Yamato or KZ versus Yamato? Why now? Why are you putting it in this building? It doesn't make any sense to me.
And on the other side of it, like you covered what I was about to say there, but my other side of it is we're now at a point looking at Speedstar Final where a lot of people can be canceled out of whatever's going to be the retirement match now. And it's kind of making it me assume now that they're just going to run Masato Yoshino versus Naruki Doi up top, because I'm assuming that anyone who's in a championship match either on 731 is not going to be booked or they're going to announce this year. And I don't know. Maybe it's me, and maybe that they'll do like this big eight-man tag that has, you know, Doi, Yoshi, Yamato, and others in it at, on night one on at Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival. But at this point, they've kind of like made a situation that it's like, all right, it has to be Doi versus Yoshino. And I know that's something that was a stipulation at the cage match last year at Dangerous Gate, that if Yoshino lost the belt he lost the match, he would immediately retire and he would be granted a retirement match against Naruki Doi. So maybe like that they're saying like, hey, that was going to be that there. That's going to be it here. But I guess this is my thing that like, I just like, I look at like the Tozawa farewell match, and I know this is coming from me, so of course I'm going to bring up this one. It just kind of seemed like it was a really nice moment to have all of the big six in the ring as the farewell to him. Whereas I don't think we're going to be getting that with Masato Yoshino, because I mean, Brother Yoshi's on the show. You think that Brother Yoshi, given Italian connection, would have as much of a reason to be in a match, in a retirement match with Masato Yoshino? Ultimo, I mean, Ultimo is probably going to be back in 3 weeks. You would think that Ultimo would have enough of a reason to be a part of it. And it's just something that, like, it's a situation that I'm making, and it's something that I hope now at Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival, they have that nice big match, and then you could do the Naruki Doi match the next night as the official retirement match. But maybe it's just me. I was hoping for a bigger, like a big, like, eight-man tag. Like maybe I'm just, like, thinking about, like, how Jushin Thunder Liger, when he retired, how they kind of set that up there, and I was kind of hoping for something similar here, and that it does not seem like that's going to happen. And for me, that's kind of personally unsatisfying.
Until the matches are announced, my gut is that we're going to get 2 8-man tags, and at this point, you're right, I don't exactly know who fits into those tags. My thought was always on night one he would wrestle some of the younger guys, and then on night two you would get an Ultimo Doi pairing, and you know, whoever else, some of the guys from his generation in that match. But yeah, it's strange to me that coming out of Korakuen, we didn't really get like the official Masato Yoshino matches. That seemed like a real missed opportunity.
Yeah, like, and I mean, I know that like that it, the show is all that you don't have to like somehow like do the impossible and turn back the clock 4 years to bring in Shima now. Like, you're not going to do that, but it just seems like to me that it's going to have to be Doi Yoshi as the retirement match. And the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm kind of confirming that.
I'm still in the camp. I would be shocked if that happens. I don't see a singles match in the works. I think it's going to be 2 multi-mans, probably 2 8-mans. And I think you're going to get, you know, Doi and Yoshino, kind of like we saw in this Kyoto show, actually, probably, you know, Doi, Yoshino, and 2 young guys against a group of, you know, probably RED guys on the first night, and then Doi and Yoshino and probably Ultimo and another guy against, you know, Saito, Horiguchi, Susumu, whoever his contemporaries are that are available on that second night, we'll see them there. So that's still where I go. I've never suspected singles match. I know that's something people have really pushed for. I don't see that happening, but I hope I'm proven wrong, because that would be exciting if that happened.
No. I think that, I mean, I'm just going to like spitball here. Doi Yoshi, Ultimo Sachi versus Murahai Sapa, Susumu, and Mochizuki.
That'd be great. If that's Yoshino's final match, I think that's a win.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping. I just don't. I was not someone that thought it was going to be a Doi Yoshi singles match up top. I thought it'd be, given the state of Yoshino, even though as we talk about these shows, Yoshino looked really good, all things considered. But it just kind of feels like it's leaning that way, Case. And I don't know if this is a me thing. I don't know if I'm personally satisfied, because I like the idea of the big trios or 8-man tags as a retirement match.
Yeah, I mean, when the Liger stuff was happening, I kind of felt like I was on a different planet for most of the time, because I was pretty, I guess not, maybe, yeah, I guess satisfied, because the Liger retirement met my expectations. It was kind of what I thought it was going to be. And other people were booking Liger on this, you know, dream match tour. And I was like, well, Liger hasn't even liked wrestling for about a decade now. Like, this man is forced to be a best of the Super Juniors every year. I don't think he's going to bust his ass every single time he has the opportunity. Yoshino's just at a spot where, you know, he looked really good in Corkin, and then in Kyoto, I thought he was pretty hidden. I didn't think he did a ton in that match. Now, granted, he didn't have to. We did a lot in Corkin. He did a lot in Corkin. I was very impressed by what he did there. But I don't, even for a final night, I just don't think he can work a singles match. Like, I literally do not think he can do that anymore. I think he has to be able to take breathers. I think he has to be hidden to some extent. And I'm much more interested in seeing Doi Yoshi double teams for the final time and perhaps some Yoshino Ultimo stuff and Yoshino Sashihoko Boy stuff, if that is the route they go. I'm much more interested in seeing those double teams than Yoshino trying to feign his way through one last epic. I, you know, look, I think it would be great if it happened, but I'm almost a little more bored by that alternate reality than I am the alternate reality that I think is a little bit more realistic of just an 8-man tag with a bunch of fun tribute spots, because they have the blueprint with the Ultimo match from World 2019. They just need to plug in the Yoshino spots and the Yoshino emotion, and it'll be a huge win.
Right. No, totally. I'm with you on that. Any other big picture thoughts before we get into Corkin?
No, I will have to talk about the Triangle Gate scene in just a second, but I want to talk about this no ropes match first.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
All right, so Cork and Hall, this was on the 9th. It will be up on the network until the 16th. It was a super no vacancy sellout, and 714, I don't think any other company has put more than 700 in Corkin since the COVID and the state of emergency. So, I mean, this is like the second or third time the Dragon Gate's done this. I mean, one can make the argument that going into this doubleheader that they will be putting the two biggest attended shows outside of the New Japan Tokyo Dome shows since they're COVID. So just a thought to kind of put in mind. I think, as you alluded to, we should talk about the no ropes match first. This was a no rope lumberjack match, Yamato versus Kai, finishing off pretty much like the storyline of Kai in a lot of ways. I know in your review, you're like, this felt like a perfect write-off for him, but it was Yamato defeating Kai in 20 minutes and 50 seconds with a Ragnarok and an absolute, like, just huge emotion Dragon Gate epic.
I have a lot of thoughts on this in my written review over at voicesofwrestling.com. I have not talked to you about this show. I would like to hear your thoughts on this before I go.
I think that I know we haven't really done the MVP of the week. I think we need to give the MVP of the week to Mr. Nakagawa, because, man, did that guy just take an absolute shellacking between this and other stuff that's happened in the promotion around it. It's something that I felt like that they used the lumberjacks appropriately. They started off the match with the lumberjacks really just kind of rolling everyone in. There was the really kind of cute a figure four spot where the high end side pushed them back in because Yamato had the advantage in the figure four. However, when they rolled all the way over to the RED side, RED, as soon as they fell out of the ring, they started laying the feet into Yamato. I thought that this was very well worked. I felt like that this wasn't necessarily like the shades of Yamato that we've been kind of been getting back into, like the callbacks, like 2010, 2009 Yamato. I felt like that Kai was like an excellent foil. I thought that the finishing stretch was just brutal. I mean, three Galareas and then the Ragnarok. I've never seen Yamato so definitively put someone out there. I thought that the use of plunder was really well done. And then Kakatora, who does not do very many dives, doing a tope con hello onto all of RED to make sure that there's going to be no more interference going to the finish. So I think that was a very appropriate finishing stretch. I went 4.25 on it. I thought that this was very satisfying as the feud finish. And like in your written review, in a lot of ways, this would have felt like a perfect send-off for Kai if that was going to be it for Kai.
Kai was so good in this match that I never want to see him again. Because if this was his swan song, if this was his farewell, universally, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, we would have gone, damn, remember how much fun Kai was in Dragon Gate? And that certainly hasn't been the narrative on this show in general. The entire time he's been in the promotion, I thought he was excellent. I thought he was so good in this match. The culmination of really everything we've seen over the past 10 months, because this is a feud that really almost lasted a year. September of last year, Kai turned on Yamato, and ever since then, they've been attached at the hip. Now I'd like to see them go about 6 months without touching each other. I know it's going to be hard in multi-man matches and just the way this promotion is booked, but I really think they got everything they could have out of this feud. And as I've talked about for weeks now, you know, the booking of this feud has been satisfying. Everything has been logical. I've been able to follow all of it, but there hasn't been that one high point that I've been able to celebrate. And now, with this, you know, concluding this feud, you have to celebrate Yamato versus Kai as a win. I think both guys came out of this feud better than they came into it.
Yeah, I mean, this gave Kai life and a promotion where he stuck out like a sore thumb. I mean, like the whole entire storyline going back to how Kai broke BB Hulk's neck and then was invited into Tri Vanguard. The fact that he was invited into Tri Vanguard meant that when BB Hulk returned, he turned on both of them. Then he kind of just played along with Yamato as his friend, and eventually just got so frustrated with him and just defected. And then the next 18 months make, or not 18 months, the next year, Hulk and Kai get making Yamato's life a living hell and leading to this point. Like that's an awesome storyline. Like that is something that I feel like Dragon Gate hit all of the big notes there. So if that is not it for Kai, and I don't think that's it for Kai, it will be really weird to see where it's going next with him, because he's kind of adrift. A lot like a lot of members of RED right now, kind of adrift.
I think he's earned a full-time position in this promotion. I mean, this is his home. You know, he was on the Kyoto shows. He's not going anywhere. I certainly hadn't heard anything that said maybe he was leaving, maybe this was his farewell. I think he's here to stay, and I think he's earned a position in this promotion for as long as he wants it. Just the poetic nature of this being it for him, I think, would have worked really well. Mike, I want to ask you something.
Sure.
We'll make this a new segment in case this ever comes up again. Is this lore or is this legitimate? Is this a figment of my imagination? Is this something that I'm reading too far into? Or is this something that we need to pay attention to going forward? And that is, in this match, after an awesome, I would almost call it like an old school style unit brawl, this feels like it was something that we would have seen between the Italian Connection and Agon Isu, or Italian Connection and Shin M2K at some point, where everyone from high end and RED ran in, they did their spots, and they got out. Yamato got the upper hand. He hits Kai with the Galleria. Nakagawa counts one, Nakagawa counts two. And then SB Kento hits Nakagawa in the back with a chair. And I found it interesting that it was not Eita, the leader of RED, who was at ringside in this match. It was not Eita who hit Nakagawa with a chair. It was SB Kento. Is that lore or is that legitimate?
I think that's legitimate because you look at how big of a storyline it's been that Eita has taken the backseat and has let everyone kind of done it. He's cool, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes. I think that's legitimate. I don't think that's lore.
I just think if this match happens, even, you know, I mean, a year ago, SB Kento was still Kenta Kabune in tights. But if you take this match and you put it into the context of 2020, 2019, 2018 Dragon Gate,
yeah,
I don't see a scenario in which Eita's not the guy hitting the referee with the chair. He would be that guy. He would be the one getting the heat there. And for SB Kento to do it, it just... to me, it felt notable. It felt like something that we can put a little sticky note by. We can dog ear that page. And in a few chapters, I think we're going to want to revisit this moment.
Yeah, no. And if it wasn't Eita, Hulk, you know, like the there were more obvious decisions there, you know. So, yeah, no, this isn't lore. This is something to come back to there. But I thought that, like, talking about like the context of no ropes matches I felt like that I was going to want to get your opinion on this. Is it my favorite no ropes match I've ever seen? No. But I felt like that, like, I thought that the Lumberjack, like, added a lot to it. And I felt like that this was, like, it's nice that Yamato brought it back. I mean, he was taking it back to 2010 in a lot of ways. And, you know, I felt like this was very appropriate. And I felt like this held up the honor, not honor, held up the legacy of the no ropes match, in my opinion.
I can't necessarily compare it to no ropes matches of the past because I did not go back and rewatch the ones that were uploaded to Drangate Network this past weekend. Before that, the last no ropes match that I would have watched would have been Yamato versus Hulk from the Drangate USA show that we covered about a year ago at this point. But I will say, I loved this match. I really, really got into the finishing stretch. I thought it was perfect for the stipulation. I thought they played to the stipulation perfectly. It felt like a fight in a wrestling ring that just happened to not have ropes rather than some overly gimmicky exhibition where they made too much of the stipulation. I thought they played it perfectly. You gave it a 4.25 stars. I give it 4.25 stars. Highly recommend it if you have not seen it. And if you've watched, you know, Drangate over the past 11 months, this is something that pertains to you. This is a really satisfying finish to a really long feud. A home run from both men, and especially Kai. I thought Kai was fucking awesome in this match.
Absolutely. Working our way back, we had the 6-man tag team match, the Speedstar Final Countdown in Tokyo. It was Doi Yoshi and Sachioko Boy. So you had both Speed Muscle and Amigo Tag on one side, just the way I like it. Against the Natural Vibes top team, KZ, Susumu, Yokosuka, and Ginki Horiguchi, one of the most tenured and most decorated Triangle Gate teams of all time. And it was KZ getting the win in 17 minutes, 56 seconds with the running elbow smash on Sachioko Boy. I didn't think I would say this case. I went 4 stars on this match. Like, I did not think that Masato Yoshino had another notebook match left in him. But boy, in my opinion, he did.
I cannot knock you for that. I went 3.75 on this, and I almost went 4, because it's a pretty pedestrian match for the first half, but that finishing stretch is really, you know, it's just one of those deals, and I'll talk about this a little bit more with the Kyoto show, but that finishing stretch is really just a blip on the radar of what this roster is capable of, but if that finishing stretch happens anywhere else in the world, you know, it's gift to death and people are losing their mind for it, but it's just another right. One of those, like, oh yeah, no, this is what these guys do. Oh, that guy with the singlet straps down, he couldn't walk 4 months ago and he's retiring in a few weeks and he's doing this. Like, it's unbelievable to think that this is the standard that is just expected from these 6 men.
And it's something that, like, we didn't really do big picture Corkin thoughts. A lot of brutal finishing stretches on this show, like the top 3 matches had finished, or the top 4 matches had finishes that was like, oh snap, that's definitive. And Sachioko Boy, I want to talk a little bit about Sachi here, being able to do the M9 and doing the Orion and then getting gasps out of the Corkin crowd in this day and age, and then KZ just taking his head off with that running elbow smash. It just was really just delightful stuff. Sachi, in a lot of ways, was just like a little highlight there. Like, yeah, the first half, there was a lot of shenanigans when Natural Vibes kept on grabbing the fin on his mask and he started doing like a flopping fish dance there. But the rest of it, I mean, Yoshino, it was something that I noticed with like Yoshino. Like, there was like one spot where Naruki Doi stepped in for the lariat sacrifice, and afterwards he looked down at Masato Yoshino, and Masato Yoshino gave like a thumbs up saying like, I'm all right, we're good here. And just was like one of those things, like when I think about like this final stretch of matches for Masato Yoshino, and we talked earlier about what we were hoping for with a final retirement match for Masato Yoshino, this is the kind of stuff I want to see in it. Like, this was like perfect there, and it just was like, Masato Yoshino is just such a genius. Like, yes, there's like legitimate worry like each time with that, but like the idea of him just going like, I'm good, is just such a nice little thing. And, you know, just all in all, this was just so satisfying.
I don't know what we were talking about, and I don't know when it was. I know it was at some point in the second half of 2020, because I remember talking about it in my old Chicago apartment before I moved, but I was trying to explain to people that if you're a newer Drangate fan, like, let's just say you hopped on board at World 2019 because there was English commentary and you've been hooked ever since. It is hard to explain for a very brief time just how big of a deal Shingo versus Sachihoko Boy was. And it's unfortunate that none of that footage is on the Dragon Gate Network right now. That's the stuff I really, really wish, because the Toriumon library at this point is a really strong collection of stuff. You get, you know, I think we're up to 3 full years of Toriumon footage. I need them to start working backwards from 2017. Let's get some 2016, 2015, 2014 on the network, because it's just hard to understand if you haven't seen it or if you've only heard about it. The Shingo versus Sachihoko Boy stuff was so heated, was so intense, and was so entertaining. And it was all this magic that really felt, you know, befitting of Cork and Hall. And for Sachihoko Boy to turn back the clock against KZ and bust out those big moves, oh, Mike Spears, let me tell you, I was loving it. I was in heaven in this match. There was so much stuff to like here. Not only that, but like you mentioned, Doi taking a bullet for Yoshino. That is my favorite spot in wrestling. And if Fuego del Sol joins the Nightmare family in AEW, I can't wait on an AEW Dark Elevation episode for him to do that spot and save Dustin Rhodes from a Nick Comoretto lariat. And I hope to God that happens, because that spot sounds so entertaining now that I put it in the open.
I mean, he's got to protect his dad.
He has to. It would be a damn shame if he didn't.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This was just like, man, like, I was just, this is why I said, like, this Cork and Hall show, like, I watched it a couple days after the fact. I was in Florida. I had a terrible trip back. I have been feeling kind of, you know, out of it since then. But when I put on this Cork and show, like, match wise, I was just like, all right, this is this is that Dragon Gate feeling, you know, like to quote Aaron Taub, let's go. Like, this was exactly what the doctor asked for it. And Sachihoko Boy turning it back to the days of Amico Tag versus Yokosuka Chome. I mean, what's better than that?
This was just a lot of fun. This is another highly recommended match.
And then we move our way backwards. We had a 8-man tag. This was Masquerade versus R.E.D. The combinations this time were Shin Skywalker, Jason Lee, Dragon Daya, and La Estrella versus Eita, SB Kento, Diamante, and Daya Inferno. Daya Inferno got the win with a belt-aided Inferno top rope lung blower in 10 minutes and 13 seconds. I know that you, I think we're both on the same page here. I went 3.5 stars on this. This was not like the best one there, but I thought that it was just a standard strong RED versus Masquerade match. And I thought that, you know, ever since they've been making sure to have after Estrella had his rough like 2 weeks, having him with Diamante, you could kind of like see, like, you can't tell because of the mask and everything like this, but you could see the like the physical confidence come off with him. And, you know, this was just was a really fun, you know, third from the top match. I mean, not the best RED versus Masquerade match. Would not be making the mixtape, in my opinion, if we were to make one, not making it the good helmet comp. But, you know, it's up there. You know, this was a very satisfying 3.5 star match.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Very satisfying 3.5 star match. I love that in all of this commotion with Eita doing his thing and with the Daya Inferno versus Dragon Daya deal, everything happening, at the end of it, SB Kento is causing so much commotion. He, to me, was the focus of this match. He was the star once again. He was running traffic. He was the guy that stood out from the pack. And I just think that's really impressive for him to be so young, for him to still be so experienced 18 months into his career. He's in there with Eita, former Open the Dreamgate champion. And, you know, not to mention current Open the Dreamgate champion, Shun Skywalker. And I'm just watching SB Kento just control this match, just have complete control and confidence in whatever he's doing. And that's something that I noticed in Kyoto as well. Just, God, this guy, Mike, he's so good. He's like, I feel like maybe sometimes the hype has died down a little bit because he hasn't jumped off the page as much this year. But I actually think the fact that he's been able to be plugged into the system and still stand out makes him even more impressive. Like, we're watching him do things now that an ace will have to do, that he'll have to be the glue guy in these chaotic 8-man tags. And in this case, and I'm not saying that Eita is incapable of it, I'm not saying that Shun's incapable of it, but in this match, it wasn't Eita, and it wasn't Shun. To me, it was SB Kento.
Yeah, and there's still places that he's fleshing out his repertoire. There's still things that, you know, he's still a work in progress in, which, I mean, you should be expected, as you said, 18 months into his career. But, boy, the confidence this kid has. And I feel bad saying kid here, but, I mean, he is two-thirds my age. So I
feel
like
he's younger than me. It's bullshit. It's unbelievable.
Welcome to my life, Case. Welcome to my life.
I felt that way. I felt that way when Zion got drafted, where I was like, oh, Zion's a year younger than me, and he just signed a shoe contract for how much money? No, cool. That's good for you, Zion. That's cool. I'm happy for you. I'm not pissed at all. Like, it's no, it's cool. It's really cool that you did that.
We live in a fair universe. We live in a fair universe with those moments. But yeah, no, it rocked up. Post-match, if we want to move on to the post-match, because I feel like this is the Case Lowe's going to cook episode to open the voice gate. So post-match, Inferno's going for the mask rip. Yoshi makes the save. And as he comes out, he makes a challenge and the old Agon Isu theme plays. And it is Toru Iwashi and a returning Tsuji Kondo. I don't know what it is in this company with people healing super fast. Like, this is much more, this is a lot more quickly than I expected to see him back. And they came back. They are making a challenge for Speedstar Final, which is another thing. I mean, these are three guys, maybe not as much Iwashi, but definitely Kondo and Yoshi. I just say Yoshi. Iwashi is the kind of outlier here, but these are two guys that, you know, if I'm fantasy booking that final match for Yoshino, these are two guys that I feel like would find their way in one way or another. And now they are having a Trion Gate match because they challenged and everyone was like, yeah, okay. I mean, I'll say this, GM Yagi is probably having the time of his life right now making all these matches.
Well, look, I thought he would end up in Yoshino's retirement match, but I told the listeners about a month ago, you better believe Toru Iwashi is getting on the Speedstar Final show. That man is getting a Kobe World payout, and I turned out to be correct. Now, this is not what I imagined him doing. This is actually far more offensive than
Case,
what I had in mind.
This is like the most bitter victory lap show we've had because I called the Yamato Kobe World match, and you called Iwashi.
Yeah, and I thought he would just either do some like dumb Sachihoko machine stuff in the opener, or he would be in Yoshino's final match, which I would have accepted. I wouldn't have been thrilled about it, but I would get it because Kondo and Yoshi have been integral to the career of Masato Yoshino, but Yoshino and Iwashi, those guys are just boys. Like, Iwashi pops up on all these reunion shows for a reason. He's well-liked by the locker room and specifically by Masato Yoshino. I get it. This is another one of those where it's like, okay, what's the best case scenario here? You either have Masquerade beat RED, and then I guess they just beat Agon Isu too? But to me, the first Triangle Gate match, I think RED are the heavy favorites there. That is Dio Lee and Estrella, the champions, against SB Kento, Diamante, and D'Inferno. I would say it's like 80-20 RED is winning that match. But then, okay, now you get put in a position where you're doing heel versus heel. The next night, you're doing SB Kento, Diamante, and D'Inferno against Kondo, Iwashi, and Yoshi, which sounds like a dangerously high ceiling and deadly type of low floor kind of match. Like, I have no feel on what that match would look like. All I know is that I'm really not crazy about it.
I mean, I will give you one thing that I'll give you a scenario that at least I'll be satisfied because we'll be getting to somewhere with. Are you ready for it?
Go for it.
No matter what happens at Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival, boy, I butchered that. Agon Isu wins at Speedstar Final, and then we get the build to the mask match.
So, I don't think Agon Isu is winning. I think they're there to take a loss. I ask somebody within Dragon Gate, I ask specifically, is brother Yoshi sticking around? That's what I was really focused on. And the answer I got was that, because I was like, well, Kondo's a roster member now, and if Iwashi's there, like, who cares? But I do need to know just mentally.
You have to emotionally prepare yourself.
Yeah, am I going to be watching and reviewing Brother Yoshi for the rest of 2021? And the answer I got was it's very unlikely that he sticks around because he's such a busy guy between the indies that he works and the business that he runs. I think they're there to take a loss. And I actually think, for as awkward as the match sounds on paper, SB Kento submitting Brother Yoshi and solidifying RED as this deadly heel unit, better than the best heel unit, as Agat Isu would describe themselves, I actually think there's a ton of value in that. It's just not, I don't know. I don't want to watch Agat Isu. It's as simple as that.
No. I mean, I respect Brother Yoshi's hustle. I mean, I like that Kobe American Pro Wrestling t-shirt that he had on during this. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right about this. And I like that. I like the response, unlikely. That's a perfect word to describe Brother Yoshi, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't want to watch Agat Isu, man. Like, if Kondo's coming back, awesome. But I don't like,
especially heel Kondo.
That's the thing. Like, I don't like watching this unit in their prime in 2004. I don't want to watch them in 2021, even if it leads to SB Kento getting put over huge, which I think will happen. But yeah, I don't like this. This in when I thought initially, because I wasn't watching this show live, I was just reading tweets, and initially I thought they had made this a three-way match just on 731 with Masquerade, RED, and Agat Isu. And Mike, I was fucking pissed. Oh my God. I was so angry that that's what they were going to do. I'm actually more okay with the two matches, one on 731, one on 81. But oh my God, when I thought it was a three-way for like 20 minutes, oh, good thing nobody at work was talking to me, because I was pissed about Agat Isu with the year 2021.
I mean, much like people in 2004 and 2005, you know, it fits. How about we talk about something that I'm willing to wager did not piss you off? Actually, I know it didn't piss you off because I read the review and delighted me. How about we have a nice like salve over us right now, Case?
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to discuss Masaaki Mochizuki versus Coach Minoru with the mindset rather that this led to Minoru elevating his Dreamgate stature. But unfortunately, I don't think that's what happened. I think instead we just got a really good match in a vacuum.
Yeah, this match rocked. I went 4-flat on it. Just like Masaaki Mochizuki versus Kota Minoru. Kota Minoru won in 12 minutes, 15 seconds with the gong. Boy, like, just went after it. And then, you know, I have written down in my notes, the final note for after this match, Minoru got real mad and gonged Mochi for the win. And that's like the story of this match. Like, these guys had like a condensed 12-minute Dreamgate match, and they just murdered the hell out of each other for 12 minutes. And you know, there's just was a lot of just awesome stuff in this match. And you know, you had that nice moment afterwards where Mochizuki basically said like, hey, you got me, kid. And Minoru, given how just like impetuous he was in the past towards him, took his hand, and you know, they had like a nice little moment there. And completely divorced of what the hell's going on with Kota Minoru, I felt like that this was entirely satisfying. This was a satisfying Corkin for me.
Yeah, it was a really good show. I had a lot of fun watching this show. I just had to rack my brain for an entire weekend to figure out what the hell happened afterwards. But yeah, you mentioned the finish, which I really liked, where Mochizuki hit a middle kick to the chest of Minoru, and he just kind of shrugged it off and then hit him hit Mochizuki with his finish for the win. It was really abrupt and kind of jarring, and I really liked the way it came across. It was a cool finish, a unique finish, very on brand of Mochizuki. And as I talked about in my written review, you know, these guys have had three singles matches now. The first one was 2 minutes, the second one was 8 minutes, I think this one was 12. And every time you've been able to see literal growth, you know, physical and emotional growth in Coach Minoru. And whereas, you know, the first match, he walks up to Mochizuki and he slaps him and then he gets his ass kicked. And then the second time, he has a more thought out game plan, but it's still frantic and he's still trying to catch Mochizuki off guard. He needs Mochizuki to be off for him to secure the win. And again, I don't know if this is lore, if this is legitimate, but to me, Minoru was working at this very deliberate pace, this very calm pace. He knew exactly what he was doing and he knew what he had to do to beat Mochizuki. And he did just that.
I mean, he just got real mad after he got kicked and hit the gong. Like, it just rocked, man. It's something like these two guys have such like good chemistry. Like the way that they worked into the soccer kick in the opening was just excellent stuff. And they played around the outside. And, you know, like 12 minutes, just completely went at each other. Like my phrase, like a bunch of killers. They were a bunch of killers.
Yeah, this was one of those matches that you need to go see if you haven't. 4 stars for me, very, very entertaining, and yet another great Coach Minoru match in 2021.
Absolutely. Then we had a rare 10-man tag. Not very many 10-man tags in Dragon Gate. Does not have a lot of 8-man tags. 10-man tags, you'll get a couple a year. This was the high-end team of Dragon Gate, Keisuke Okuda, Kagetora, and Benkei teaming with Brother Yoshi of Dove Pro and Kobe American Pro Wrestling against Don Fuji, Ryo Saito, Yasushi Kanda, Kenichiro Arai, and Gamma. It was Yoshi getting the win on Kanda in 9 minutes and 40 seconds with a nice Jamaica.
Now, how tuned in to you, and this is such a dangerous question to ask another human being, how tuned in are you to what is going on with Kenichiro Arai in the Heat Up promotion?
Well, luckily, Joe Lanza made sure I was well aware that he is the double champion there, and he threw the titles in the trash.
Yeah, I don't know if Guts, or I guess it's Heat Up, not Guts. Guts for a while was making tape. Is Guts World a thing anymore? Do they run shows?
We are approaching the 1 hour mark, so it is time for me to pull up Cage Match.
Yeah, please do. Let me just say, as you pull up Cage Match, you know, I don't know if Heat Up airs anywhere. I don't know if that's still like one of those Nico things that most promotions have abandoned at this point, but I would like to watch Arakan wrestle and Heat Up if that's a thing that's happening somewhere, because I love the idea of this, you know, Dragon Gate second generation student dumping this sleazy fucking Heat Up title in the trash. Hey brother, I'm gonna go get my paychecks in Cork and Hall. Ever heard of it? For this promotion called Dragon Gate, we're kind of a big deal. Fuck Heat Up. Oh my god, I love that.
Okay, so Guts World closed in 2018.
Damn, gone too soon. What was their last card? What
All right.
sent Guts World out? What was the final match there?
Well, it was Guts World, the final, Bukutsu Shien. It was in Shinjuku Face. Announced attendance 660 or 600, which, you know, that is, I'll believe it if I count every person twice in that building, probably. It's a pretty long card. The final match was Guts Ishishima versus Mask Mystery. Further down the card, Hiro Saito and Tatsumi Fujinami beat Michiko Kageyama and Mr. Ganosuke. Guts World Tag Team Championship match in a title switch. Hatoshite Good of Kenichiro Arai and Shota defeat Fuminori Abe and Toru. Masao Orihara defeat Tetsuhiro Kuruda. Kizio Matsumoto and Kunishibo Kamen defeat Buffalo and Yuji Kito. Chongo Noshi Sano, Papillion Ikimi, the only person on this page surprisingly without a cage match, and Shinobu defeat Drake Morimatsu, Kazuhiko Matsuzaki, Kazuhiro Tamura, and Ryan Upin. And the opener, I'm just going to say canceled, and Keita Maruda defeat Daisuke Kanahiro and Tetsuya Izuichi. And the canceled person, you could probably take a guess who it is, guys.
Well, it's Joji Otani, because the thing about, yes, Joji Otani that sucks, obviously what he did was awful. It also sucked because he was like the one Japanese junior on the indie scene that I would go out of my way to watch. So obviously what he did was terrible. We condemn him for that. On a personal level, also fucking sucks, because I really, really thought he was talented.
Yeah. J-Stage is just a dream. J-Stage is just a dream. So... yeah, I guess he, I mean, Kenichiro Arai just makes me so happy. Like, as one of the world's biggest Kenichiro Arai fans, it makes me very happy the fact that he's still out there. And Jay on commentary making the comment that one of the title belts he came out with was the Tenryu Project International Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. And he made the very appropriate comment of, this is kind of awkward because that's part of the Twin Gate now. And that is true. He has lost the Heat Up Universal Championship in the meantime since the show.
As for this 10-man tag, look, I hope Brother Yoshi enjoyed himself. I thought the finish was cool with Kagetora and Dragon Kid hitting a dueling 619 into the Brother Yoshi German suplex, but it's a match that existed.
They kept it moving and they kept it light, which is all that one would hope here. The big highlight is... month after month, the fact that Ho-Ho Loon is just so impressed with Erican, you know, and as he should be, you know, just fantastic stuff with it.
Well, that's a good time to note that Ho-Ho Loon did make it to the broadcast table in the Cork and Hall balcony by the time the opening match began. And
he had like five minutes.
That, hey, you never know with this guy. You never know. You never know where he's going to go. Okay. this man could have been anywhere those 5 minutes. And thank God he ended up next to Jay and he was able to call this opener.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, he could have went and got an ice cream cone. You know, he could have gotten some of those famed Cork and chicken tenders. You know, he could have like, there's a lot of things that could have happened there. But yeah, I thought this was fun. Like, it kept it moving. Everyone kind of did their things. I mean, 9 minutes for each of these guys. You know, I mean, you got like a flourish of everyone in the match there. I was like 3.25 just because I was like, all right, this is a Brother Yoshi match of 2021 I enjoyed. Let's see if the future ones I still enjoy.
Yeah, what about the opener? This BB Hulk, Kaito Ishida, and Kazuma Sakamoto, they defeated the Natural Vibes Trio, Funky Jackie Kimei, King Shimizu, and UT. What do you think about this?
I love Young Vibes. I love them. The fact that, like, if you think about it, like, Kamei and Shimizu basically have really started teaming with them at like the same time, and there's such chemistry with all these guys is just awesome here. Kazuma does this pounce that Funky Jackie Kamei probably took, like a bump that Monty Brown would have been proud of. Like it was awesome there, and I felt like this was like one of the best openers I had in recent memories. I was 3.75 on it.
It's a 3.5. It is absolutely a health hazard to book Sakamoto and Funky Jackie Kamei in the same ring. Keep on doing it, Dragon Gate. It's super entertaining. And I thought the stars here were BB Hulk and UT, the two Sapporo natives down the stretch. I thought they absolutely killed it. Is UT a Sapporo guy?
I was going to say, I didn't want to be mean and correct you. He's from Nagoya.
Who shares the homecoming shows with Hulk?
KZ.
Son of a bitch. They're same unit, same guy. You know what I mean. They got the letters in their name.
They had a long period tag team being like Hokkaido natives, guys. North Tribe.
I don't know if that was a long-running tag team. They did like what, like 4 matches with each other?
I think they had a lot more than 4 matches as a tag team. Like there was a while that people thought that there was going to be a North Tribe Twin Gate run.
Yeah, because they wrestled CK1. And it was awesome. That was a Twin Gate match. That was Champion Gate in Osaka 2017. And that was, I think they did like KZ and Maria maybe against Shima and Dragon Kid. And then they did Hulk and KZ against Shima and Dragon Kid. And that match was awesome. That was a bleak weekend for the promotion. Champion Gate 2017, not my favorite era of Dragon Gate. Real tough one for me personally. But I remember loving that Twin Gate match. Because this podcast for a long time was just factually wrong about how great CK1 was. But, okay, look, I got it wrong. My apologies. But I still thought Hulk and UT were awesome together in this match.
Oh, they were. They were. It wasn't just like an absolute blast. King Shimizu rules. Like, we are the podcast of record on Dragon Gate. So other podcasts on this network who might have other opinions on Natural Vibes, Natural Vibes rule. And King Shimizu absolutely rocks in this role, and the fans love it. The fans love when Shimizu puts on the glasses during Party Anthem and then suddenly starts dancing. They like when he does Das Wunderkind. It is just a fantastic act, and you know he'll just turn it back on. And did you notice that Jay kind of made a comment about that on commentary?
Yes, I did. Yes. Okay. Jay and Ho-Ho Loon, I joke about Ho-Ho, but once again, I thought Jay and Ho-Ho were very good together.
Sterling.
Jay has gotten so comfortable in this role, and especially, you know, something like the main event, that no ropes match, that it doesn't require, you know, a book to be written on the history of this match, but it is something unique to Dragon Gate, and I thought he got those points over incredibly well. I just think he sounds like a professional in the booth right now, whereas, you know, there were times when he first started his career as a broadcaster where he sounded like a guy that knew a lot. And he was almost like inviting, you know, a Wikipedia page to the broadcast table. Now he sounds like a broadcaster. And I thought throughout the show, he and Ho-Ho were their delightful mix of funny and informative. And that was from opening match to main event. So well done by those two.
Yeah, just sterling performance from both of them. Match zero, Takashi Yoshida and Problem Dragon Monday Ryu defeat Punch Tomonaga and Ho-Ho Loon. It was Tomonaga eating the fall, so So yet again, Hohaloon on the outside, not seeing what happened. As Yoshida hit a jackhammer on Punch Tomonaga in 4 minutes, it was a match zero.
Yep. Yes, it was, Mike.
And that does it for the Cork and Hall show. As I mentioned at the top, it'll be up until the 16th. Very quick watch. They did not do an intermission at all. They just like filled time for 3 minutes as they did the quick like ropes out, like the fastest I've ever seen anyone take off the rope.
Yeah, they took the ropes down so fast it almost threw me off. Like I wasn't mentally prepared to watch the main event because I thought we were going to get like another 15 minutes and then Dragon Storm was going to hit and then we would get into the thing. But no, they just yanked the ropes off and main event time it was.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was not the only show that Dragon Gate has had since we last talked. They returned to Kyoto KBS Hall for a case. I had to look this up because I changed notebooks as I filled up the other one. This was their first Kyoto show in 4 months because of COVID and other reasons. Attendance 319, up from 204 to see Masato Yoshino's farewell in Kyoto. It's up on the network until the 18th. This was like a rare show we both kind of talked about beforehand. It picked up towards the end, but the first half of the show was a first half of a Dragon Gate show that just kind of was having matches.
Look, I've got 3 points to make. Why don't you run down the results and then I'll make those points individually.
All right. So the results opener, Natural Vibes of KZ, King Shimizu, and Funky Jackie Kamei defeat RED of Eita, BB Hulk, and Hyo. KZ got the win with the running elbow smash on Hyo in 12 minutes and 32 seconds. Singles match, UT versus Takashi Yoshida. UT won with the passion hold in 9 minutes and 42 seconds. And then we had tag team match, unaffiliated team, Ryo Saito and Yosuke San Maria versus the Open the Twin Gate champion team and a bunch of killers, Kaito Ishida and Kazuma Sakamoto. Ishida got the win for his team with the ankle hold on Maria. 8-man tag, Masquerade versus RED, combinations this time, Shun, Jason, Daya, Estrella, Kai, SBK, Diamante, Daya, Inferno. SBK got the submission on Jason Lee, and they've been going back and forth on Twitter ever since. Semi-main event, another tag team match, high end of Keisuke Okuda and Kagetora defeat the Natural Vibes team of Susumu Yokosuka and Ginki Horiguchi. Kagetora got the win on Horiguchi in 14 minutes with the Gura Makakari, and that's what set up the Brave Gate match. I mean, it made sense. Number two contender beats number one contender. Like, makes sense. He gets a title shot off that. And then Speedstar Final Countdown in Kyoto, 8-man tag team match. Masato Yoshino, Naruki Doi, Don Fuji, and Kota Minoura versus the high-end plus Kanda team of Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Binkei, and Azushi Kanda. 21 minutes and 16 seconds, the longest match of the weekend. Kota Minoura got the win with the gong on Kanda.
Okay, real quick, here are my 3 points. Match number 4, the Masquerade versus RED match. I love what they're doing with SB Kento and Jason Lee. They've been running an angle basically by themselves on Twitter. I don't think it's realistic, but I would love when August rolls around to see, you know, match 3 on a Cork and Hall show, Jason Lee versus SB Kento in a singles match. I think that would be awesome. There was a spot in this match where SB Kento went to do the hat throw where, you know, he throws his hat at his opponent. The opponent gets distracted. He does his move. He went to do that. And he messed up the spot. He dropped his hat and Jason Lee just clocked him in the face. And that looked excellent. Well done by both guys. This is one of those matches. I thought it was a little bit better than the Cork and Hall match. And it is, you know, it's not a match I'm ever going to think about again. And I was kind of thinking about that of like, oh, this was like a really good 8-man tag. And compared to what RED and Masquerade have done all year, who cares? I'm moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the fun things about these Masquerade versus RED matches is that there's different things I've noticed, Case, that we both kind of picked up on, loved. I like the fact that Daya and Inferno are adding more and more in their interactions with each other.
They look good right now. They look dialed in. And those are two guys that, you know, Inferno has never really been able to find a groove, given that he's only been around when Dragon Daya is there. And Dragon Daya, for as much as I love him, can be streaky at times, we'll say. They have found their groove going into their big match at Kobe World.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that's why, you know, I don't want it to happen, but, I mean, that would clear the deck for the mask versus mask match. And I think now, whereas when Dia Inferno started off, I was so down on the character. Now I think like this feud has gone to a point. Yeah, it's been starting to stop because of Dia's injuries, but now I feel like that they're at a really good place.
Yeah, enjoyed that. As for the Bravegate scene, match number 5, Okuda and Kagetora versus Yokosuka and Horiguchi. At the beginning of the year, Mike and I both had a conversation on here about how we wouldn't miss Kagetora if he was gone. He has really turned that around. He has been a delightful addition to high end, and I love the way they got, you know, into this position of Kagetora pinning Horiguchi, saying he's going to get the winner now of Okuda versus Horiguchi. And I will hold off on a point I was going to make. We'll save that for the Kobe World preview. So that's my point there. Anything to add on the Bravegate scene?
I think that it kind of proved us right about Kagetora. When Kagetora has something to do and he cares about it and something to sink his teeth into, Kagetora is excellent. And we saw that case in point since he's joined Tight End, you know? And like the little promo he did where him and Okuda was like, yeah, we're teammates there. And Okuda called him Kage-sama, cracked me up.
Well, you mentioned it earlier, but I talked about it in my review, but Kagetora's dive onto RED at the end of the no rope match, what a tremendous visual. That was such an awesome spot.
And I mean, in the Masquerade versus RED match, when they did a triple house show at the same time, and you saw the amount of air that the nice thing about having Diamante and Kai, I should have said this then, in a match with Shun is that Shun can do some flying a little bit now. And like he did to Harris, and he did like just a sling over the top rope dive that it looked like that for like a brief moment. I saw a photo of this, that he looked like he was like 15 feet in the air.
My final note, speeds to our final countdown in Kyoto. I probably need to give this match a rewatch. This show had been so dry up to this point that I admittedly did a bad job. Couldn't really lock myself in and focus on a 21-minute main event. This is probably a 4-star match, but I can't say for sure.
3 3/4 for me. Like,
that's what
right
I gave it
there.
To be safe. I didn't feel comfortable enough putting it in the notebook, but on rewatch, I might bump it up to 4.
I mean, they gave the people what they wanted in this match case. We got a lot of Don Fuji and Yamato.
Oh, it was like, excellent. I mean, it was really, really good.
If somehow Yamato's coming out of the doubleheader as champion, give the people what they want. Give the people what they want. One last ride with Don Fuji up top. Come on. Like, that match is just, it smiles on the faces. I mean, that's what some wrestling promotions do. They put smiles on faces. Dragon Gate, you could put a smile on my face if we get a Don Fuji versus Yamato Dreamgate match if Yamato wins.
Dragon Gate. Gate of Destiny is not about the matches. It's about the moments. And you need to tell your stories and put smiles on faces by having Don Fuji wrestle Yamato for the Open the Dreamgate Championship in one of the biggest buildings that you run.
You got to do it. But also, like, just like Don Fuji is just living his best life. Recently turned 51. A lot of July birthdays in my life. But they were doing the Armringer stomp spot, and Yamato was just so distracting of Don Fuji that Don Fuji lost his place and kind of did a weak one and just cracked me up there.
Yeah, good mix. It's been, you know, especially these later stage Speedstar final matches, really good mix of comedy and intensity. Minoru once again looked great here. Then, like you said, you had the Yamato versus Fuji stuff. There was a lot to like in this match.
Yoshino and Ben. There was a Yoshino and Ben exchange that looked straight out of the title match that they had.
Yeah, which
or the title matches they had.
I couldn't believe that Ben got the thumbs up to do something with Masato Yoshino. If I was agenting this match, it's like, okay, well, we're 3 weeks away from World. Ben probably doesn't need a sequence with Masato Yoshino here, does he? But they went for it and it worked out.
Yeah. Just like the one thing that like probably moved it away from a 4-star match for me, actually, was there was a moment where Masato Yoshino does a Sol Naciente and the Kyoto crowd was almost reverberating like an excitement seeing him win with his finish once more. And then we had someone come in and break up the pen and the crowd deflated. Like, if he would have won that match with the Sol Naciente, 4-star match for him.
Yeah, I think that's very fair.
And then we need to talk about the post-match for a second, Case, because, oh yeah, it's time for Masato Yoshino to give something away. And who is it? King Shimizu. And what does he want? He wants a pose. He doesn't want to move. He wants a pose. He wants a pose where Masato Yoshino does his like cross arms out and then brings his hands in. That's all he wanted. And he got it. And Yoshino was kind of flummoxed by it.
I would be too, but I also, you know, look, it's King Shimizu's world. We're just living in it, Mike.
And what a world it is. Also, he did reveal, like, this isn't lore here, Case. Now we officially know the secondary reason that Masato Yoshino's retiring, much like the remainder of the roster who's had to put up with him for over 20 years, he's just sick and tired of dealing with Dragon Kid.
I get it. You know, Dragon Kid, between his gymnastics abilities and his incredible muscles and his affinity and caring affection for animals, I hate the guy too. Can't stand him.
I mean, that's not why he's tired of him. That's not, guys. That's not.
It's why I'm tired of him.
I mean, I wish I had the body control to do to be able to go up on a turnbuckle and to completely just go. I don't even know what it's called, but like whenever he does, like I think it looks like he's like hanging like a flag. That just gets me angry. This dude's almost 50 and he's doing that.
It's absurd. So Kyoto, I would say watch the final match. Move on with your life after that. Anything else you would recommend on this show?
Not watch UT versus Takashi Yoshida.
No, I would skip that one. That's coming from a pretty big UT podcast.
Yeah. No. There was a moment in this match I was like, what are we doing here? I was almost fully on board with Yoshida, and then this match happened, and now I remembered why I only trust Takashi Yoshida as far as I can throw him, and I'm not a strong person, so it's not that far.
We've got 10 minutes, Mike. Let's talk about Bandido for just a second. I think this is the week to do it.
Yeah, so this weekend, Bandido became the ROH World Champion. He becomes the third ever dual ROH and PWG champion. Kevin Steen and Adam Cole are the only ones who else have done it. Bandido is interesting because he has kind of a... We were talking about this, and how about you just pose the question that you posed to me?
Yeah, this is something that is only going to come up on this podcast, but I do think it's worthy of a quick discussion, and I would like to hear people's thoughts at Open Voice Get on Twitter. When it comes to the legacy of the Dragon System, and we talk about whether it's Matt Sydal or Pac or Ricochet or the Young Bucks, guys that we can credit that said, you know, they were at this point in their career, and then they went to Dragon Gate, and from there, they upped their game immediately. I do feel like the Dragon System kind of deserves some credit for Bandido's career, and he's not a guy that I don't think would initially come to mind, but if you look at his cage match, this is maybe something where, you know, if Cubs is listening, he can correct us a little bit, but Bandido, according to Cage Match, debuted in 2013, and if you look at the first 5 years of his career, it's, you know, a handful of crash bookings, a handful of DTU bookings. He pops up in CMLL for two matches in 2016, He is a non-entity until 2018 when he shows up in Dragon Gate, and specifically his third match, January 16th, 2018, that Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz versus Bandido and Flamita match, that was a big deal. That was at a point where Western interest in Dragon Gate was really starting to fade, and that is the match that got Bandido into PWG. That is the match that likely got him into AAW. That is the match that got Bandido where he is right now. And Bandido, someone who only worked in Dragon Gate in 2018. He only worked 72 matches for the promotion throughout that year. But if he doesn't have that Wentz and Xavier match, I don't think any of it happens. His career drastically changes as a result of him working in Dragon Gate. And if you look at him from, again, you know, that January tour at the start of the year through the end of the year when he leaves at that great four-way tag match at Final Gate, he is a much better wrestler than what he started as in 2018.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I would wager I'm probably just a touch more versed in Lucha than you are, and I didn't know who Bandido was in 2018. Like, I knew that, oh, yeah, Flamita's bringing a friend. He used to bring Jurassic Boy, and that was fun, so I was excited to see who it was. And then, since then, just completely changed his career. So, it's something that there's a group of gaijin that came through that did not stay long, but, like, had, like, a run there, and then were destined to bigger things. Like I mentioned before, Kevin Steen did a Dragon Gate tour. I was going to say that.
Kevin Steen, ROH and PWG champion, also Dragon Gate alum. So two out of the three points to the Dragon System there.
Muscular Outlaws member Kevin Steen. I should have said it like that. That would have been funnier. But
I think Bandido's run in Dragon Gate is very similar to the Bucks, where they weren't around for long. They aren't necessarily etched in the history of Dragon Gate, but it did ultimately drastically change their careers in a positive manner.
Yeah, and like the Bucks, he did not always make tape. Like, there were a lot of like those tours where he would have not been on the show. You know, just like kind of how like Jimmy, when Jimmy was around, didn't make tape a whole lot there. So I think like the Bucks in a way is kind of the comp here. I don't consider him a full Dragon System person in the same way I don't consider the Bucks a full Dragon System person. They're kind of their own thing. I mean, for those that don't know, Bandido was a Ultimo Guerrero student who couldn't get booked in CMLL. He ended up, to my understanding, doing Liga Elite, which was yet another one of the many attempts that we've seen, and we've seen a lot since then, at a third big Mexican promotion that kind of failed, and he kind of just like was a little bit adrift until Flamita brought his friend in, and since then everything changed.
Yeah, to me, I am marking it up as a victory for the Dragon System. He's not really a Yoshino guy. He's not really a Shima guy. There's no one that we can directly attach him to, with the exception of the brand. And I think this brand ultimately paved the way for the success that he's had, which is an undeniable, universal, critical success that has been awesome to see. But I really don't think any of it happens without Dragon Gate. And specifically, you know, that Flamita and Bandido versus Dez and Wentz match, it happened
for the time. Amazing.
For the time, amazing. And it happened at the beginning of 2018. So by the time we got to the end of that year, like, it felt like that match happened in a different universe. It was such an important match that became irrelevant so quickly in the context of Dragon Gate.
Right.
And it's crazy to think about. Whereas if that match happens a year earlier or a year later, I think we get a lot more staying power of that match. I think people remember it much more fondly. But 5 months later, it was like, oh yeah, this Dragon Gate as we know it has changed. This is irrelevant. Everything that happened in January, February, March, April, forget about it. It's a new company now. Oh, by the way, Flamita and Bandido are going to be here for Kobe World, and Flamita's challenging for the Brave Gate belt. Like, it just all happened so fast.
Yeah. It's something that I wonder now that I think that the platform was huge for him, but then everything afterwards is him becoming like this megastar. I wonder how much, like, 10 years from now, is this going to be like how, if it wasn't for the Bucks, like, writing about it in their book, like, or, like, the fact that Shima and OWE were a part of AEW at one point, would we even remember, we would remember, okay, it's like, of course, because we're two crazy people, but would the remainder of wrestling fans, and especially, like, wrestling fans within, like, this overall, like, sphere, would they remember as well? Because I wonder, like, if that's going to be the case.
Would they remember that Bandido was in Dragon Gate?
Right.
Oh, I don't think I don't think the casual ROH viewer, let me phrase it like this. If somebody knows who Bandido is and somebody knows who Dragon Gate is, I still think the majority of that group of people don't know that Bandido wrestled in Dragon Gate. But I also think you could say the same thing for the Young Bucks, unless you've read their book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that was the point I was making. You just summed it up a lot better. But yeah, no, that's awesome. Congrats to Bandido. Congrats to Roosh for just being Roosh and immediately posing the match.
For just fucking winning at life.
Roosh. God, I love Roosh so much. Like, that's why I've been openly calling for the one quick, just a very quick aside, the one quick way you fix Andrade and AEW, you call Joe F and Cough and you bring in LFI. You bring in the Munoz brothers. That's it. Roosh comes in. Everything's good.
Yeah, that is. I did not have time to watch that match. I would have done a quick review of it, but I will get to Bandido versus Roosh. I hope that match was good. And congrats to Bandido. I think it's awesome. He's now Ring of Honor World Champion.
Absolutely. Well, we're getting close to an hour and 30. You said we had 10 minutes there. We still have a couple more minutes left. Anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
No, I'm sick, and I would like to stop talking now.
And I'm very tired because I was involved, or I was a subject to a bomb threat at Fort Lauderdale Airport on Saturday.
And you were the one that called in the threat?
Case, no. if there's anyone in the government listening to this, no, I did not do that. No. I just was at the airport at the same time and completely ruined everyone's day.
But you were packing a knife, right?
No. I was not. I was wearing a tracksuit and was very, and I was ready to come home.
Knife guy bit's gonna come back to bite you, Mike Spears. Be careful.
I mean, a lot of my bits come back to bite me, Kate.
By the federal government.
Please. All right. So you can follow us at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case at _Case. And if I'm not in trouble and arrested because of things that were said in the last 60 seconds, you can follow me at Fujiheya. That's going to do it for Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next time. Take care.